The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. I thought I'd just run through a few of the headlines here at the start before I get into the main subject that I'd like to cover here for the bulk of today's broadcast. Here in the UK, just to run through again some of these items, there's some bit of news now about the upcoming elections in June. After calling for those new elections, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, I mean, she called for those elections thinking that it would lead to a much bigger majority in Parliament. And now there's polls showing that it might be that her party loses seats. And Melanie Phillips sent out an email yesterday and wrote about this on her website. She said that she reminded her readers, rather, of the fact that she said a while back that Theresa May was taking a big risk in calling for this election, and that all it would take is one mistake, one bad mistake, and she could be in trouble. Her party could be in trouble. But then Melanie Phillips said this in her email yesterday. She says, as for Jeremy Corbyn, he's in the opposing party, of course, the distressing reality is that his program is remarkably popular. Why would it be so popular, she wonders. Do many people believe that public spending should go up regardless of how it's paid for? Yes, she writes. Do many people want to see the railways renationalized because they have either forgotten or are too young ever to have known how inadequate they were when they were state-run? Yes, she answers. But surely people recoil from Corbyn's view that the West's wars abroad are the cause of Islamic terrorism, not to mention his support for terrorist groups as Hezbollah, Hamas, IRA, and so on. Well, no, they don't. Many actually think he has a point. That's what she brings out in her post yesterday, that what's most disturbing in this development, leaving aside the mistakes that Theresa May is making, with some policy choices. But why would so many in Britain embrace someone like this who believes and is out there espousing that all of the West's wars are, that's the cause of Islamic terrorism. That's what motivates that bomber in Manchester, for instance. It's the West's fault. It's Britain's fault. It's America's fault. That's what Jeremy Corbyn believes, and he's gaining in the polls. He's gaining. Pretty amazing development. We'll see how this plays out over the next couple of weeks. Speaking of terrorism, there was a post also at Town Hall saying that the Palestinians have paid over $1 billion to terrorists and their families over the past 4 years. Can you believe that? Funding terrorism. And, of course, the head of this movement, or these people, Mahmoud Abbas, he was right there alongside President Donald Trump just last week in Bethlehem. This post here says, days after President Trump publicly scolded Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas over payments for terrorists and their families, well, it goes on to talk about this study conducted by a member of the Israeli Knesset. $1.2 billion. The PLO has responded by saying, well, this is not true. These are just welfare payments. But that's not the case. This is funding terrorism right out in the open. Everybody knows about it. Prime Minister Netanyahu has denounced it, even as it says there, even President Trump last week said it should stop. And yet it continues. The funding continues. Over at the USA Today, I thought this was an important piece from Glenn Reynolds. This, I think, appeared in yesterday's paper. And it's talking about the real Watergate scandal today. We touched on this program a couple weeks back. But Glenn Reynolds says here, in 1972, some employees of President Nixon's reelection committee were caught when they broke into the Democratic National Committee headquarters to plant a bug. This led to Nixon's resignation and probably would have led to his felony prosecution had he not been pardoned by his successor, Gerald Ford. But if a single bugging of the political opposition is enough to bring down a presidency and maybe lead to an unprecedented criminal prosecution of a former president, then what are we to make of the recently unveiled Obama administration program of massively spying on political opponents in violation of clearly established law? All this was unveiled last week. I think we covered some of this there at the tail end of Friday's program. This story that the media, the major media, largely ignored last week. They're not concerned about this scandal. There's too many scandals in the Trump presidency that they think they see. And yet here is one hiding in plain sight, as one blog put it. It's a scandal, and it's right out there in the open. And it's so much worse than Watergate. That's what Glenn Reynolds is saying here in his piece. Well, you know about the report last week. John Solomon and Sarah Carter over at Circa, I believe, is the website. And how that a judge, a reputable judge at that, presiding over the FISA court, came out against the Obama administration, saying it was guilty of an institutional lack of candor, which is just a nice way of saying they lied. They violated the rules. They've broken laws. It's unconstitutional. And Glenn Reynolds brings out in his piece that in all of the so-called scandals surrounding the Trump administration, nothing comes as close to this as far as seriousness is concerned. I mean, the seriousness of this violation, of this law-breaking. This is talked about at length in America Under Attack, as you know. But here it is, so much worse than Watergate, so much worse than what the Trump administration is doing. And yet the far-left media could care less. They just ignore it. They just ignore it, and so it stays there hiding in plain sight. One of our news gatherers sent me this one today, too, from the Washington Post, just showing how that the heroin epidemic in the United States, it's also ravaging Mexico. Some alarming statistics in this piece. This is from yesterday's edition of the Post, the opioid epidemic that has caused so much pain in the United States is also savaging Mexico, contributing to a breakdown of order in rural areas. This article talks about, well, it quotes one individual as saying that we've become a land without law. It's no longer a problem that's just situated in Central America. It's spreading across Mexico now. It says Mexico provides more than 90% of America's heroin, up from less than 10% in 2003 when Colombia was the main supplier. And so here comes Mexico. Because of this voracious appetite that America has for heroin, now it's sending in 90% of what America consumes, and it's leading to all kinds of lawlessness, a breakdown of law and order in Mexico. It says heroin's like steroids for drug gangs, pumping money and muscle into their fight to control territory and transportation routes to the United States. So the drug wars intensifying south of America's border, and all because of America's sins. Our sins, as Isaiah the prophet said, they testify against us. They certainly do. Mexico's a land without law, and in so many ways, America, too, is becoming a land without law. This last item here, I think, ties in with what I want to discuss today. I saw just on Twitter, shortly before coming down here, from the Telegraph, President Trump has reportedly decided to pull out of the Paris climate change agreement. It cites a website and two sources close to the Trump administration. And then it talks about how that this strikes a massive blow to the legacy of Barack Obama. I guess that's the significance of this move as the Telegraph sees it. But the bigger story here is that it just drives yet another wedge between the United States and Europe, which we talked about at length yesterday. That's the big story here. Germany, Italy, France, they're already upset because President Trump didn't come out and endorse it while he was in Europe last week. And now, evidently, here comes the official announcement. The United States is pulling out. I want to begin this section with a verse in Daniel 11 and verse 40. You're very familiar with it if you followed this program for very long. But over there, Daniel prophesies, verse 40, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." So we've told you before about these two kings that clash in the latter days. This clash between the king of the north. That's the German-led European combine. The German-led United States of Europe. It clashes with the king of the south, which is Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and its allies in the Middle East. You can see there from the scripture, it says that Iran, or the king of the south, pushes at Europe, pushes at Germany. And then Germany retaliates forcefully against this push, this Islamic push. And following that, enters into Jerusalem. Now, in the Key of David years ago, my father made the point that you see this spectacular clash leading us right into the prophesied Great Tribulation, and the United States, Manasseh, is not even mentioned in this prophecy. It's not even mentioned. I think the point that my father made was that by this point, it's too weak to do anything, to even get involved. But the United States, looking at it another way, has been quite active in supporting, empowering, enabling these two kings. I mean, look at what's happened over the past 10 years or so in the Middle East, as the United States has effectively handed over control to the king of the south. Now Russia's involved and such, but I mean, the king of the south is working right in stride with Russia. Look at what America's grand strategy was during the Obama administration. It was to basically get out of the Middle East and hand over control to the king of the south, to the Ayatollah, to the mullahs in Tehran. And now, I mean, we're in a new presidency, but look at what is fast becoming America's grand strategy for Europe. Transatlantic relations, as I covered yesterday on the program, effectively handing over control to Germany. You take the lead. And this isn't just something that started with Donald Trump. It really goes back many, many years, but it's just, it's moving. It's accelerating so much in recent months. Again, I'll refer you to yesterday's program. If you didn't hear that yet, you can, of course, listen to those podcasts at thetrumpet.com or at kpcg.fm. But here we're missing from that prophecy in Daniel 11. But look, it's worse than just leaving the neighborhood and handing over the keys to the new dominant power. We are leaving. I mean, we're leaving the Middle East. We are leaving Europe. But we're right now, I mean, we are and have been actively engaged in strengthening and enabling and empowering these emerging powers, these emerging kings. The kings of the north and south, they are rising, and they're rising fast. And the last two U.S. presidents in particular have helped to enable these prophesied kings. And as Herbert Armstrong wrote so many years ago, The irony here is that we're helping to build the very monster that will soon turn on us and devastate our people, particularly that monster to the north. But we've had a hand, a direct hand, in helping to empower both of them. Verse 40 again says, and at the time of the end. So it's for the end time. It's an end time prophecy. It says, the king of the south shall push at him, push at the king of the north, push at Europe, push at Germany. Now, we identified the king of the south, Iran, as far back as 1994. I think we were even indicating it before that. But here for some 20 years, I mean, it wasn't necessarily, I mean, you could look at that prophecy or those statements that we made in 1994 or there in the mid-1990s and say, well, that's just far out. I mean, look, the big threat in the Middle East is not coming from Iran. I mean, it's coming from Iran's neighbor. It's coming from Iraq. It's coming from Saddam Hussein. Seems like such a long time ago. Look at how dramatic, though, the changes have been these past two decades. Now, unquestionably, Iran is king. And as we've said before, it was President Obama who effectively coronated him, or that nation, as king on January 16th last year. January 16, 2016, when the nuclear deal was implemented. Talk about empowering and enabling. I've mentioned this post before from Michael Ledeen. This is from 2014. He wrote, during his first presidential campaign in 2008, Mr. Obama used, listen to this, in light of what you see in the news right now, the big Washington Post story from Sunday, I mean, it got all kinds of coverage, over the three-day weekend. Jared Kushner, and evidently these back-channel agreements that he has with Russia or that he proposed in December. But here is Ledeen writing in 2014 about then-Senator Obama during his first presidential campaign in 2008. He says here, Mr. Obama used a secret back channel to Tehran to assure the mullahs that he was a friend of the Islamic Republic and that they would be very happy with his policies. See, if it's Barack Obama establishing secretive back channels with the mullahs in Iran or the communist regime in Cuba, to take another example, well, then the leftist media could care less. No scandal there. But if the president's son-in-law, if he does that or suggests that with the Russians, we are talking about a scandal of epic proportions. Donald Trump needs to be impeached. Well, go back to this impeachable offense. Secret back channel. A secret back channel arrangement with the number one state sponsor of international terrorism. And how do we know there was a secretive arrangement or deal in place? Well, all you have to look at is the history. Remember the presidential elections in the middle of 2009. This was early on in President Obama's first term. Here was an administration, as we can now clearly see looking back on it in hindsight, here was an administration that would loudly and actively support every imaginable democratic uprising, Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Algeria. But when it came to the Green Revolution there in June of 2009, completely silent. When the Democratic Green Movement rose up against the mullahs in 2009 in protest against obvious voter fraud, the Obama administration turned a blind eye to it. In fact, the Obama administration worked to undermine the democratic uprising, just the opposite of what it did with Egypt and Libya and elsewhere. Eli Lake, he wrote this for Bloomberg last August. He said Obama wasn't just reluctant to show solidarity in 2009. He feared the demonstrations. This is speaking of the Iranian uprising. It wasn't that he was just reluctant to support that movement. He feared that the demonstrations would sabotage his secret outreach to Iran. See, he had the secret back-channel agreement that he had opened up while he was running for president. It says here in his new book, this is, again, Eli Lake quoting from Jay Solomon's book, The Iran Wars. Solomon, of course, writes for the Wall Street Journal, or at least he did. I think he's with Circa now, or maybe with both. I'm not sure, but he's an excellent reporter, an excellent journalist. But Lake says that this book that Jay Solomon wrote last year, or at least it was published last year, it uncovers new details on how far Obama went to avoid helping Iran's green movement. Behind the scenes, Obama overruled advisors who wanted to do what America had done at similar transitions from dictatorship to democracy and signal America's support. I mean, all of the advisors, they just assume, well, this is going from a dictatorship to a democracy. Of course we're going to support the democracy. And President Obama said, no, not so much in this case. Not with this particular nation. Not with the King of the South. Solomon reports, it says here, that Obama ordered the CIA to sever contacts it had with the Green Movement's supporters. The agency has contingency plans for supporting democratic uprisings anywhere in the world, Solomon writes. This includes providing dissidents with communications, money, and in extreme cases, even arms. But in this case, the White House ordered it to stand down. In this particular case, with this particular nation, the Islamic Republic of Iran, the biblically prophesied King of the South, in this particular case, this president wanted to empower the mullahs, and he did. He did, as Eli Lake wrote. Obama, from the beginning of his presidency, tried to turn the country's ruling clerics from foes to friends. He says it was like an obsession. I mean, he established that tone from the beginning, as I say. That's brought out in what Ladine had to say. It's brought out in what Eli Lake wrote about. It's brought out in Jay Solomon's book. Obama himself said it in the Cairo speech from 2009, a clip we've played so many times before, clip 5.
Since the Islamic Revolution, Iran has played a role in acts of hostage-taking and violence against U.S. troops and civilians. This history is well known. Rather than remain trapped in the past, I've made it clear to Iran's leaders and people that my country is prepared to move forward.
He made it clear to Iranian leaders. He said that just a few months into his presidency. But as Ladine brings out in his post from PJ Media in 2014, he had established secret back-channel negotiations with Iran's leaders. He's prepared to move forward. And he did. He did, irrespective of their guilty past and looking at the 30-year track record of that Islamic regime, the number one state sponsor of terror. Well, that same speech in Cairo, of course, he went on to defend, not condemn, but defend Iran's nuclear pursuits. This is the King of the South. The President of the United States was defending its pursuit of nuclear power. Well, we had a lot to say about that Cairo speech, as some of you well know. My father, of course, at the trumpet, talking about how that this did more to help the terrorist cause than perhaps anything America has done. We helped the King of the South. We empowered the King of the South. We enabled this prophesied king. And because of that, as my father went on to say, prophetic events, they're just surely going to accelerate. It didn't just stop with the Cairo speech or turning a blind eye to the Green Revolution. I mean, it all culminated in this Iran nuke deal, which was made final January 16th, 2016. And we've since, of course, learned about all of the disastrous details of the deal. Everything that the United States went through to ensure that this deal got done. President Obama himself, every step of the way, just obsessed with this. As Eli Lake brought out in that Bloomberg piece, you step back and look at the Obama presidency as a whole. I mean, when has there been an administration that had, a U.S. administration, I mean, that had more opportunities to undermine the Iranian theocracy, to undermine the leadership presiding over the number one state sponsor of terror? And yet every step along the way, you had President Obama ignoring or rejecting every single one of these opportunities to bring down that regime. Instead, he propped it up. Brad McDonald wrote in May 2015, this is from 2 years ago at the Trumpet, virtually every foreign policy decision or action the Obama administration has made has emboldened Iran and other radical Islamist regimes and organizations. Because of this administration's policies, Iran has expanded its influence in Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Lebanon. Moreover, the U.S. has offended, isolated, and weakened Iran's regional adversaries. It's irreparably damaged its relationship with Israel, making the only democratic, truly Western-friendly nation in the region more isolated and vulnerable than ever. It says the president's foreign policy has also weakened the strategic position of more moderate Arab countries like Saudi Arabia and the Gulf nations. I mean, again, if you step back, there were quite a few commentators that were writing there near the end of President Obama's second term, right when he was finalizing the deal with Iran, the deal over nuclear weapons. There were quite a few analysts that were saying, look, if just given a little bit more time, those sanctions would have crushed the regime. The people of Iran were growing more resentful by the day, starving. They knew. I mean, the pressure on the regime was mounting. And yet here comes President Obama to the rescue, helping out the mullahs, something he was obsessed to do from the very beginning. Now, over the years, of course, we talked about how the emergence of this king of the South, how that this was only going to provide further motivation for the king of the North to get busy, for the king of the North, Germany, to rearm. And that maybe hasn't happened quite as fast as it appears to be happening now. But I think another thing that you have to at least comment on in passing, I mean, you see it now going, it's accelerating like never before. But even in the days of Barack Obama's administration, and even going back, I think, before him to a lesser extent, with President Bush and others, there has been this constant call for Germany to step up and lead. I mean, really, it goes back to the fall of the Berlin Wall in the 1980s. The United States, I've covered on this program before how many people like Margaret Thatcher were very wary of a reunited Germany because they knew from history what that meant. A lot of them believe, let's keep Germany divided so that it can't ever reemerge as a world power. But there was President Reagan and many of his successors, American leaders, American presidents, urging Germany to become a world power. Look at President Obama in 2011, just to take one example. He told Chancellor Angela Merkel, don't hide behind your history. Never mind your history. Come forward. Step forward and lead. Act in accordance with your importance, he said to Germany in 2011. The world today does not fear a strong Germany. It's rather disappointed when Germany's too reserved, and so Germany's got to step up. Here again, the same story. The same story as with the King of the South. You have Germany and Iran, both rising powers, and U.S. presidents helping them along. Pretty amazing story. It's happening. And when we come back, I'll focus more on what we were talking about yesterday. Just the impact of that that trip that President Trump made to Europe last week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror. Their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe. And it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Just look into past history. You see if we're going to gain anything by trying to build up the United States of Europe. You see if we're not building a Frankenstein that's going to turn on us and destroy us. Most of you will live to see it. You remember that I told you and that I spoke by the authority of Jesus Christ.
Strong words, those, from Herbert Armstrong's old radio program. We're building up this Frankenstein monster. And, well, most of us now, we're living to see it, aren't we? And do we remember who told us about this? In his old correspondence course, this is from Ambassador College, 1965. It says here, ironically, the United States and Britain have helped to build the monster that will devastate and enslave them. And it's been in both. Of course, the focus here is on the German beast power, the European beast power. But it's been in both cases. Germany and Iran, they're both rising and rising fast. And here are the leaders of Manasseh, U.S. presidents, helping them along, propping them up, empowering them. This lesson talks about how prophecy reveals that Germany, the German nation, is to unite with nine other European nations. And this was in 1965. And so for the German nation to unite with nine others, and there's other quotes from Mr. Armstrong that talk about half of them coming from the West and half of them coming from the East. And so here was God's prophet saying that the Iron Curtain that divided Europe, that would have to be removed, of course. And for Germany itself, Germany would have to be reunited before, as a German nation, it could even unite with nine other kings. All that's beginning to happen. Well, look at how much has already happened. Germany's reunited, 1989. Germany reunited. Now there's the European Union. It's got many more members than just the 10. But here we've seen these seismic shifts over just the last year with Brexit and now Donald Trump, his presidency. Dramatic changes are happening. Going back to this 1965 lesson, says when the Germans inevitably sit in the military driver's seat of this resurrected Holy Roman Empire. Look, they said this was inevitable. When this union comes into play, you can be sure that Germany's going to be in the driver's seat. So much of what we hear today is about how Germany's in the driver's seat economically. But look, as I covered yesterday, they're in the driver's seat militarily as well. All that's left is for them to build up their militaries. And that's what, guess what, the President of the United States is urging them to do, publicly scolding them last week in Belgium. You've got to pay your fair share. I'm not even going to voice my strong support for Article 5. You might be out there on your own. And Chancellor Merkel took the hint, and she said on Sunday, you know what, Europeans? You know what, Germans? We're on our own. We can't depend upon past friends. We've got to go forward. We Europeans, we've got to look after ourselves. It's happening so fast. Germany's in the driver's seat. This correspondence lesson said it would be German generals commanding this European military force. And I just went through with you, I think it was last week. These other member states that are, no, I think I covered this with you yesterday. These other member states that are just handing over their militaries to Germany. That's what's happening. How could this correspondence lesson be so spot on? How could Mr. Armstrong know? He knew because of Bible prophecy. He knew because it's revealed in your Bible. It says here, finally, this is from that correspondence lesson. Paradoxically, the very Frankenstein monster that prophecy warns is to destroy us has been proposed, encouraged, aided, and abetted by both the United States and Great Britain. Did you get that? The leaders in Ephraim and Manasseh, we've been the ones who've proposed it, who've encouraged this, who've aided and abetted it. We, of all people, helped to build the monster. So that's what Herbert Armstrong was saying in the 60s. Now consider that. In light of what we discussed on yesterday's program, here again, if you didn't hear it, go to thetrumpet.com and listen to the podcast. Listen to that one first. There's more and more stories. They continue to come out about the President of the United States, his disastrous swing through Europe last week. And this poisonous, toxic climate. This transatlantic climate, as Slate puts it, that's poisonous. Slate says his comments about Germany have been particularly toxic and beyond that, stupid, reflecting no understanding of the country's strategic importance or its dreadful history. Again, I know these are publications. I'll quote from the New York Times here in a bit. They have it in for the president, okay? That's understood. But still, there's something to be said for understanding Germany's dreadful history. And whether it's a liberal publication or a conservative one, it is a dreadful history. That's just the facts. And we need to know that history, as well as Bible prophecy. Well, this piece at Slate, it goes on and talks about the speech that Ms. Merkel gave in Bavaria on Sunday. We went through that yesterday. We even played sound bites from it. It talks about President Trump's speech from last week. Brussels, Thursday. Where he wouldn't even pay lip service to the pledge, the Article 5 pledge. And that left many European leaders just absolutely shaking their heads in astonishment. You mean the United States isn't going to come forward with a full-throated pledge to support Article 5? Well, then who can we depend on? If not the United States. It doesn't matter how the United States tries to sell this. The White House spokesman, by the way, he was out yesterday trying to convince reporters that, hey, everything's great. I mean, everything about the trip was fantastic. This is great for the United States. It's great for NATO. It's great for Europe. Here's what Sean Spicer had to say yesterday, clip one.
The president then attended the NATO summit in Brussels, where he boldly stood up for American taxpayers and our common defense by calling on other NATO countries to pay their fair share on a speech delivered with the leaders of NATO's of all of NATO's countries all present. Hardworking Americans saw a leader represent them and their security on the international stage. The president also urged NATO to adapt the alliance to more effectively combat terrorism. Later in the meeting, the member states unanimously agreed on those two priorities, and the Secretary General was extremely complimentary of the President's work to dramatically strengthen the alliance by getting member states to increase their contributions.
So, in his view, it was a spectacular trip. All the European leaders just absolutely love President Trump. And one reporter even asked about the relationship with Germany and President Trump's relationship with Angela Merkel. And Spicer described it as fairly unbelievable. They get along so well, it's unbelievable. That's what the White House spokesman had to say. And then just yesterday, this would have been before the spokesman Spicer stepped before the podium. And obviously in response to Angela Merkel's fiery speech on Sunday, the president tweeted, this was yesterday morning, just before we came on the air. He sent out a tweet saying, we have a massive trade deficit with Germany, plus they pay far less than they should on NATO and military. Very bad for the U.S. This will change. It's not that any of that isn't true. It's like I covered yesterday, though. I mean, he's drawing a line in the sand. And no wonder Germany now says, hey, we've got no one but ourselves, Europeans. That tweet, as I say, that comes out after Merkel's speech on Sunday. Let me play one more clip for you. This is, again, Sean Spicer at yesterday's press briefing, clip two.
And how did he view her comments that she felt that Europe could no longer depend on the United States?
Well, respectfully, that's not what she said. So since you're misquoting the chancellor, let me read what she actually said. She said the time when Europe could rely solely on others is somewhat in the past. And as I've witnessed over the past few days, Europe must take its fate into its own hands. This means working in friendship with the U.S., the U.K., and neighborly relations with Russia and other partners. That's great. That's what the president called for. He called for additional burden sharing. The Secretary General of NATO said that the president's calls are what's moving them in the right direction. The president is getting results, and more countries are stepping up their burden sharing. That is a good thing for them. It's a good thing for NATO, and it's a good thing for America.
Now consider what that's the spin. That's the from the White House. It's good for America and the American taxpayers. It's good for Germany. It's good for Europe. Everything's awesome. We've been used to hearing that for the past 8 years. But what's the reality prophetically? Look at what's happening when all of these European member states step up their burden sharing. If they step up, and if Germany takes the lead and goes it alone, apart from the United States, Britain's on the way out. What comes next? Prophecy tells you. It's all there in that lesson from the correspondence course. I just read it to you. It's from 1965. How could they have known? I mean, that was 50 years ago. And now look at what's happening today. Look at what's happening today. Today's New York Times, the print version, it says Mr. Trump was continuing a drumbeat he began during his visit to Europe when he told European Union officials that Germany was very bad on trade. But the president's campaign against Germany, while accurate on the statistics, overlooks the benefits in the German-American trade relationship and overstates Berlin's ability to do much about it. Well, this article goes on and talks about, again, I'm not trying to defend Germany or America for that matter. It just talks about how German companies employ hundreds of thousands of Americans in the United States. and how that these German companies in the U.S., they're sending out BMWs and Mercedes all over the world from these U.S. plants. And how that there's a lot of Mercedes and BMWs in the United States because there's lots of Americans that like them. Just some of the facts on trade. I mean, it's easy to get up and to talk about the trade imbalance or the fact that Germany's not paying enough into NATO. But what are the alternatives? Trade war and a remilitarized Germany? Is that what America wants? Answer, yes, it is. That's what America wants. Here we have these ascendant powers, the kings of the North and South, and the leaders in the United States and Britain, America in particular, are helping to empower them. What a story. What a development. You look at all of the reaction in Europe. Never mind what the White House spokesman says. You would expect him to say something like that, that it's all great. But just look at what the German chancellor is saying now following the trip. Italy's joining in, saying that the Europeans need to take their future into their own hands. France is strengthening its alliance with Germany. There was an exchange on CNN. I think this was from last night. And this was Jake Tapper's, the reporter, and I don't know how to pronounce the name of the expert that they, the international reporter that they have on. But basically, they're summarizing some of the events over the past week with these European leaders reacting to the president of the United States, his position. This is clip three.
And French President Emmanuel Macron, he had a couple of interesting interactions with President Trump during the trip, including this tense handshake that we're showing right now, white-knuckled, and Macron would not let go. And then another time, Macron walking straight towards a group of world leaders, looking like he's headed for President Trump, and then he veers off to Angela Merkel and goes to the crowd and finally gets to President Trump. Emmanuel Macron trying to send a message to the president.
Yeah, certainly. And the strange thing about it, Jake, is that he's completely open about it. He went out and he said, yes, I did all of these things on purpose. He said the never-ending handshake was because he didn't want to show any sort of weakness in front of President Trump. In fact, he compared President Trump to Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey and to Vladimir Putin, saying these are all leaders who see international relations as power politics, as a balancing of relations. So he felt that even in gestures, he couldn't give an inch, and that's why he did the things he did, including that never-ending handshake, which he himself said was quite awkward for him as well.
That's the leader of France, the newly elected leader, comparing President Trump to Erdogan and Putin. I mean, if you think about, over the past couple of years, we've been talking about Germany's search for a strongman. Nicholas Frank, he discussed that with us last week in that interview from last Thursday, saying that Germany, when things begin to go bad, Germany's going to look for a strongman. And we've talked about the refugee crisis. Obviously, there's an economic crisis that's coming. That's going to be the final trigger. But given what's happened over the last week, I mean, you just wonder how much of this growing anti-Americanism, how much that might push Germany toward the strongman. I mean, you can see why Angela Merkel said what she said Sunday. Because she knows, she understands, she senses the sentiment in the German populace. She knows what they're angry about. She knows that Donald Trump is deeply unpopular in Germany. And so here is, again, another example of a U.S. leader pushing these kings to take the lead role, empowering these prophesied kings, which leads to that prophesied clash. Here's yet another example, and just the fact that he is like the way European leaders might think. He's like Erdogan, he's like Putin. And so what do we need in Germany to counter that? Germany is rebuilding. Germany is on the rise. Watch the Germans, as Nicholas Franks said at the end of last week's program. Watch the Germans. Listen to this analysis. This is from Fox News last night. Charles Krauthammer once again, clip four.
I mean, do we really want to see a united Europe led by Germany? Last time that happened, it didn't really turn out that well. Now, I'm not implying these are the same generation, but there's a reason why every president since Truman has wanted to tie Europe to the United States. And now you've got the British leaving the EU, Brexit. You've got a president in the United States who really wants to see Europe go off on its own, or at least gave that impression. We may rue the day when the Germans are not tied down by transatlantic bonds. You know, the famous statement of the first Secretary General of NATO was NATO was created to keep the Russians out, the Americans in, and the Germans down. In the end, probably the Germans will end up leading a united Europe, but we need to cultivate whatever ties we have. It's not a day to rejoice when we weaken the transatlantic ties.
Good for him. Good for him. That's pretty good analysis. Do we really want to see a united Europe led by Germany? Have we forgotten the reason why every president since Truman has wanted to keep Germany down? We may rue the day when the Germans are not tied down by this transatlantic bond. We're seeing that bond, that bind between the two. It's unraveling. It's no longer the United States trying to keep the Germans down. It's the United States trying to prop the Germans up. It's the United States trying to empower and strengthen Germany. That's the bottom line here in all of these developments. Leave aside your personal desires or wishes as an American or as a Brit or as a German, and just consider the history and consider the prophecies. Brad McDonald sent out a great trumpet brief last night in response to Gideon Rockman's article at the Financial Times. He also mentioned a column from Boris Johnson years ago, I think 3 or 4 years ago, where these two prominent commentators, of course, Johnson's now in politics as well. I mean, here they've just gushed over Germany, modern Germany, heaped praise upon Germany. Germany's so humble, and they've learned so many lessons from history. They're truly repentant. They never want to go back to that dreadful 12-year period that Nicholas Frank spoke about last week. And as Brad McDonald asks in that trumpet brief, okay, well, that's what Gideon Rockman thinks. That's what Boris Johnson obviously thinks. But what if they're wrong? What if they're wrong, and what if Nicholas Frank is right? I mean, is it crazy? In light of history and prophecy, is it really that crazy to think that what Nicholas Frank was saying in this very studio last week, to think that that might be true? He went through the history with us, Nicholas Frank. Brad McDonald writes here in the brief, during our interview last week, Mr. Frank, he's talking about the television interview. And by the way, he linked to a little clip from that TV interview. This is something that's not from last Thursday's program. So if you're not getting the trumpet brief, here's yet another new feature we've added. I mean, this is new. You can go to that trumpet brief email and click on that little audio file. I think it's like a minute 40. And hear what he had to say ahead of the documentary that we're producing. Hear what he had to say, at least in that little snippet. That which pertains to what Brad McDonald's writing about in this email. He says, during our interview last week, Mr. Frank explained that after the war, the Germans did not talk about the war or the crimes committed against Jews and others. Parents and grandparents rarely spoke about the war with their children, he said, and they never expressed shame or regret. When the war did come up, survivors talked about themselves as the victims rather than the aggressors. After the war, he explained, we were the suffering people, not the aggressive people. Okay, so who is right? Is it Gideon Rockman? I mean, you want to believe it. You want to believe that they're repentant. You want to believe that they'll never make the same mistake again. But what if they're wrong? And what if Nicholas Frank is right? And what if Germany is in fact not repentant? Make sure that you go and read Brad McDonald's trumpet brief from yesterday. And of course, if you don't receive those emails, you can subscribe to the trumpet brief at thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you want to send some email responses to this program or any other, you can send it to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.